welcome to the Popcorn Junkies. We are reviewing episode 2 of The Idol, Lily Rose Depp, The Weeknd, in a challenging, searingly unflinching and slightly hurtful kind of portrait of a pop star, which for me is increasingly becoming based on Britney.
Well, not based.
No, but I mean, you can see the
influences. There's lots of influences that they're showing us. And we loved episode 1. I think we went into episode 2 and I was nervous.
I was waiting for it to go wrong.
I was really worried that we weren't going to see any more of the team, the management team.
Yeah, the entourage.
The entourage.
Yeah.
And it was great because we opened bang straight away with the team. It was funny. I was like, oh, are they going to go in a minute? It's so weird.
What do you mean?
It's like, are we only going to get a minute of them?
No,
I thought I was so nervous about this. But
yeah. Well, because you don't like being left on your own with The Weeknd.
Yeah, I think that's
basically it's understandable.
The Weeknd's character, not Weeknd, but it just went off. It got off to a cracking start and very Britney-esque moment.
I thought that was sensational. Because I tell you what's annoying me about the publicity and the pre-press and all this kind of stuff that's knocking around. And it's the way, and this is what's really damaging when this sort of, reviewing happens prior to something actually landing. Lily Rose Depp this week has done an interview saying, it's interesting that people have such strong opinions on a series that has an arc across a series when they've only seen 2 episodes. They only screened 2, as I understand it, at the Cannes Film Festival.
But how many people are having opinions on this and they've not seen it?
I know, but
they've not even seen episode 1. This is about jealousy.
Totally about jealousy.
She is exquisitely beautiful.
It's so frustrating.
She has lived this life, the movie star life, which, isn't easy.
Being a movie star.
I mean, we're huge Johnny Depp fans, but, he's had his problems. He's had his issues. And people, I don't know, so often people think, if you've come from a talented star, you are not going to have any talent. The prejudice that comes along.
But what's really annoying is that I'm really quite capable of parking at the door what the public opinion is about something and going in to see something. Classic example of that in recent years was The Lone Ranger. Ironically, a Johnny Depp film
that
the critics wanted to fail because they didn't want Johnny Depp to potentially be sat on top of another franchise as massive and potentially as successful as Pirates.
And it was brilliant. If you never watched
it. For the record, it is a sensational film. And even a number of reviewers after the event have said they think they got it wrong.
We loved it straight away.
Because
we put ours into class.
Yeah. But I mean, and this isn't about, of course you can not like something, but I get really frustrated when there is a sort of trendy, cool movement to just not like something. And actually, you know what? I don't really need to see it to know that I don't like it. That drives me mad.
We even had to put our girls up on it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're, they're real movie lovers, and they got swept up a bit.
People have dismissed it because they think Lily Rose Depp can't carry the weight. I was staggered for a second episode.
I just think, where else is she going to take? And you know what? She will have suffered for this part. She's going to depths inside herself, isn't she, to deliver what she's delivering. So this opening scene with the management team, and she comes out, and again, very Britney, she's got the stomach out, hasn't she? And she does this
so awkward. It was so awkward.
It was brilliantly awkward. There's so many Brits, fantastically directed.
Yeah, really, really good. Because I got the egginess of a star standing there. She's vibing to, she's got her version of the song that she wants to put out because she's worried that the version that they're going to resurrect her career with is a load of bullshit.
Sugar sweet.
Yeah. And so she plays it to her team. And it's excruciatingly embarrassing as well as you're rooting
for.
It's
played so well by, honestly, the ensemble cast are of such a calibre. I mean, Divine Joy Randolph, please let's have more and more of her. She is
sensational.
So good. And
Hank Azaria
really came into his own, I think, in this episode. The way that he played the pathos so well, having to be the manager, having to, but also deep caring deeply. And it kind of breaks your heart when people care about her.
Yeah.
And also,
you can see her sliding away from them.
And
that's what I felt in his character. That Hank Azaria played this one. I've got goosebumps thinking about it. He's such a great actor. But he's playing that part. It's clearly established that she's lost her mum. This team is her parents, are her parents. They say it, don't they? We're looking after her.
Yeah.
And Hank Azaria's got that thing where he also says, do you remember when I saw you? I remember when I saw you when you were 11. Again, really banging to the back of the net, this idea of a young starlet idol. Yeah, so I was getting Britney vibes again there. It's not about that, but it's interesting that there are sort of echoes of
that. The dialogue is very good in that with the few lines, you can get a lot of history.
Yes.
They do that well. It's kind of sushi style.
But you can feel
dialogue.
With Hank Azaria and Divine, they're both desperate like a parent. They're like,
We don't exactly, we know these are managers, yeah, yeah, we don't know exactly what. And then we have Jane Addams, who plays the record company executive.
She's shockingly hot.
Fucking hell, she's so good, isn't she?
She's so...
I was actually terrified of her.
So tough.
But honestly, there's this whole scene where Lily Rose is filming her video. I don't want to spoil it, but it is agonising. Oh. Spiritually, physically, you feel the pain. Oh my God, how good was Lily Rose and that kept running back and forth off that?
Oh my God.
She plays the mania so well.
And there was a woman that, the actress who played the director of the pop promo was sensational. She was absolutely brilliant. The exasperation, the power dynamic was brilliant. And then Lily Rose Depp starts to, yeah, as you say, you don't want to sort of give it too much of it away. But there are aspects to what's happened to her. Like there was a scene earlier in it where she's been particularly intimate with a glass of ice or an alcoholic drink in her crutch area. And they're all having to essentially damage limitate, aren't they? And crisis manage images that have been taken of her, so we're having to do this. And so you just feel the chaos and the out of controlness happening around her. And then you've got her running around for perfection.
But also, when she's begging, please let us have another day to film this. I will pay for this myself. I actually know actresses that have done the same thing. So really? I'll pay because that panic. She plays everything. She pitches everything so perfectly. Mm. She is a future superstar, as long as the world doesn't try and break her.
Well, or try and characterise this as something that it isn't. Now, I think because of the negative press, it's not going to perform as well as it could have done or should have done.
We've got anything to do with it. We're going to be shouting about it.
It's also, I think, suffering from the idea that people are going, oh, it's from the people who did Euphoria, therefore, you know, is it ever going to be as good as Euphoria? For me, it's completely different. I mean, it's the same by the same team. But actually, one thing I really want to talk about, which I really like about this, there is an aspect to the, weirdly, the sound design. I don't know if you've noticed this. There's almost a creepy silence around her a lot when the action isn't happening and she's waiting. And it's an awkward, almost documentary real sound that is, like on the pop promo shoot, the sound that you're hearing, it's not clear, it's not clean, it's open, and it lends a certain rawness to it. And also the shots is like the French New Wave. They're using, which you just don't see that often anymore, zooms. They're using the zooming shots to sort of find things. And so it has a sort of, well, that shouldn't sound like a wanker, but I'm going to sound like a wanker. But it does have that sort of Jean-Luc Godard kind of French cinema, French New Wave cinema thing. So it's like the camera is a sort of one of her entourage just watching it go on. And that, I don't know why, that adds a certain sort of reality to a world that's so spectacularly unattainable.
Yes, because though, it's very much a drama, and beautifully done, you do fall into the trap of thinking you're watching a documentary or reality.
Exactly. Really, you feel like
really
you're behind
clever,
the scenes.
Really clever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You feel like you're behind
Rachel
the scenes.
Rachel Sennott, who I haven't seen before, but oh my God, I'm becoming obsessed with her.
I knew you would. You've got to watch Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. You're going to love
it. So good. Mm. And that horrific scene.
Well,
we're not going to spoil that, but I've thought about her all day. I have taken these young women into my heart like they're my daughters. I'm not joking. In episode 2, I'm so attached to these characters, and the weekend.
Well, can I just say also, there's a particular scene that a lot of social media has reacted to.
Oh, this is so ridiculous.
This is so frustrating. And this is a scene in which it's a sex scene, and it's particularly sinister, creepy, voyeuristic,
coercive. Not if you're into that sort of thing.
No, not if you're into it, but what he's saying. Oh, right. Okay. Well, what he's saying... Well,
she was loving it.
She was loving it. But is she in a fixed state to necessarily know what she's loving? And he's particularly malevolent in the way that he's kind of... what he's doing elsewhere in the show.
Yeah. Please don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
100%. He is a misogynistic, devilish beast, this character.
He looks like
the devil. He is revolting. He terrifies me. I just keep thinking... I know it won't be good for the show, but I keep thinking, dump him, dump him. Of course, she won't be because it's a great storyline. But I think people taking umbrage with that particular sex scene, actually the one that I was so horrified by was what he was doing with the porn film that he was doing.
The porn film?
Yeah, when he was electrocuting.
Oh, right. Was that a porn film? I thought he was just in a... I didn't know they were filming, were they?
Well, I think so. But anyway, when he was electrocuting.
Oh, right. Was that a porn film? I thought he was just in a... I didn't know they were filming, were they?
Well, I think so. But anyway, for me, it was just...
There was a scene of virtual torture.
Yeah, torture.
With one of the men in his group.
Exactly.
And it was the most sinister moment.
But the scene with them was like two consenting adults. Of course, we know that she's messed up and all of that. And we know this is going to be become just awful, whatever he does to her in the future. But you can't say, I don't want to see scenes of misogyny, because the whole point of movies and books and is to see the things that we don't know and the worlds we don't know.
I feel it's even like, stronger about it than that.
You can't put PC stuff on a drama.
No, no, you can't. This goes to the heart of the... I'm going to really not pull my punches here. This goes to the heart of the stupidity of where we're at culturally, getting to, where you make a film about a misogynist, which means you have to show them being a misogynist, right?
Yeah.
How do you characterise a misogynist in a piece about misogyny without showing the misogyny? And then when you show it, everyone goes to social media to say it's misogynistic.
That's misogynistic.
It's moronic.
It's a drama and he's a sadistic psychopath.
The Weeknd has come out in an interview today saying he doesn't understand why people... He says, I'm a nasty piece of work.
Yeah, he's vile.
He's not saying it's good.
Do we only have people that we like you said, that we'd invite round to dinner? Yeah. I mean, what the hell?
Oh, I'll judge this drama, Nanny Di, you'll know. I'll judge this drama on whether I like this
character. Yourself a nice Pride and Prejudice and curl yourself up in front of the fire. A nice pussycat you can stroke and a cup of cocoa.
It's meant to be challenging. This is about, clearly, the mental breakdown of someone at the centre of fame. She's called the idol. She couldn't be more successful if she tried.
And yet she's the most vulnerable person you'll meet.
Exactly. I think it asks us to ask questions about the idea that just because someone's privileged, it doesn't mean they can't be, what is privilege? And it doesn't mean that they can't be going through hell. I mean, it's a dark sort of irony in a sense that Anne, you reminded us before we did this, that Anne Heche is one of her last appearances is in this. And of course, then she was someone who herself was absolutely, whose life came to a crunching end due to a mental health crisis. Just because you're famous, just because you have money, doesn't mean you don't feel these things.
God.
And, I think that's where the casting of Lily Rose Depp is even clever on that level.
Well, I quite like as well, within the storyline, she's about to be broke.
Precisely.
So now what are you going to say? She doesn't have money.
Yeah.
She can't pay for the house.
Exactly.
And she's under the spell of a really evil piece of work. Mm. Oh, my God, it's delicious.
Now, and then just finally, just where this ends up, I think it ends up in a really... I thought the final scene shouldn't have worked, really, on paper. And I thought it was incredibly, incredibly sinister moment where essentially they've inveigled into her sort of personal space.
This group.
There's the suggestion that I'm feeling already Charles Manson, the Tarantino film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we could put up shop here. Oh, we're onto a bit of a good thing here.
Singing.
And then two of the characters started singing.
Oh my God, it's so brilliant! And the twist with one of the characters, I'm not going to spoil it. The twist with the girl we think's really nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
And also, the girl that ran in and was just naked the whole time, he didn't pick up that she was typing down what he was saying.
It's deeply, deeply troubling.
There's so many layers. I want to read this in a book. Oh, my God.
It's like a slow, evolving horror story. In fact, going back to the style of the camera work, just finally, you're getting all sorts of French cinema. You're getting all sorts of documentary behind-the-scenes-y stuff. But you're also getting... there's a director, Italian director, Dario Argento, which is that sort of Italian kind of horror. And there's horror in this. It's a horror film when you're in her house.
And it's like watching a really slowed-down car crash.
Yeah.
Because you're like, what is going to happen to her?
I have to say, it's excellent.
And it brings in all the most tragic stories that you hear about stars, Marilyn, all of the, this fragile vulnerability, this ability to also be the diva. We only seen flashes of the diva, actually, though, haven't we? She's incredibly nice to everyone. There's a scene where a tear rolls down her face, and it's not because perfect timing. It really wasn't. I would have felt exactly the same without the tear. But just so that you know what I'm talking about, if you watch it, the pain that came up through her body and through her eyes, she inhabited that pain. That's what I mean. She's not acting here. She's really feeling everything, and she should be applauded for that.
Absolutely applauded. Please, if you're not of a...
If we haven't convinced you now.
Yeah. If you're a nervous disposition, it is very sexual.
But I've learnt now. I close my eyes in the sex bits.
Yes, she does. And I tell you what's happened. Yeah. It's not pleasant.